You're listening to the John C. Scott Political Forum. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Thank you. Good afternoon. It is August the 19th. No lamp under my basket whatsoever. I am telling you, if you nominate Raheena Romero to be the Democratic nominee for mayor of Tucson, you're making a big mistake. This would be an unmitigated disaster. She is not qualified to be mayor of our town. Now, Raheena Romero is a nice person. She's probably a great mother, probably a great friend, probably great in many other aspects of her life, but she is not qualified to be mayor of this town. And her campaign with this dark money makes her the queen of dark money in any election we've ever had in the history of the city of Tucson, pumping in over $300,000 on top of her, quote, clean election money. She may go to $1 million, with 3 out of 4 of those dollars from dark money sources to get the nomination for mayor of Tucson. It is unmitigated. It's absolutely a crime. It should be. By the way, the line that she got involved in, at least the third-party line, concerning, obviously, Steve Farley saying that he did not support health care money from the Affordable Care Act to come to Arizona. He did support it, fought for it, and helped it make it possible that we now have 400,000 people in the state of Arizona that have insurance now and never had it before. Hospitals are open that would be closed thanks to the efforts of others and Steve Farley. The same thing goes for teacher salary increases. Steve Farley, state senator, fought hard to keep that money pumped into the stream of teacher salaries rather than going someplace else. And the lying from the third-party candidacy efforts of Raheena Romero have distorted the Steve Farley profile. It's just a big lie. Well, let's talk about that. Don Jorgensen, former chair of the Democratic Party, is with me. Let's talk, Don Jorgensen. Third-party money that we've never seen the likes of before in our town. It's historic, isn't it?
It is historic. I think just for Raheena Romero's campaign alone, you've seen over $500,000 worth of support there, and probably close to $1 million of outside money coming into the Tucson mayor's race for the first time in history. It really is unprecedented.
You have to ask yourself, why are these people doing this? And I don't have an answer for that, do you?
Oh, I think it's in part a result of the kind of renewed activism on the part of the Democrats nationwide, and you can thank Donald Trump for that, for getting Democrats really focused on all campaigns, which is a good thing. They're looking down ballot, where before it was just the top races. Now attention is going all the way, as you see, not even state legislative races, all the way down to mayor's races and such. So that's a good thing. The fact that the money's coming from outside, I think, is focused particularly in Raheena Romero's camp as a result of the fact that she's a woman, and there's a lot of money that supports female candidates, places like Arizona List and groups like that, as well as the fact that she's a Hispanic candidate. And so you have groups like Chispa Arizona who supports Hispanic candidates. So that's a new factor in Tucson for the first time. And I think she's attracted this outside money for that reason, as well as gone after it by having a former staff person set up one of these PACs just to raise money for her, too. So that's been the real focus, as you said, which also kind of puts a lie to the claim that she's a clean candidate. She did that to get the city money and the match, but did not disavow any outside PAC supporting her. She disavowed taking PAC money into her campaign, but did not disavow support from these outside shadowy groups that seem to have attracted all this money. And they're the groups also putting out some of the worst misleading mailers and attack ads we've ever seen in Tucson also.
You know, I think you have to also consider the simple fact that Raheena Romero's husband is the top chief advisor to Raul Grijalva, the longtime congressperson who's had a tremendous political machine on the west and south sides of our town, still very, very active. This machine is in full bore in support of Raheena Romero, and I would think that the congressman would be able to pick up the phone, call any labor group in the country and any other group in Phoenix. Most of these outside dollars are coming from Phoenix, and literally be able to raise by a phone call literally tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars, which have been raised for Raheena Romero, who, as I mentioned, husband is the top guy for Grijalva. And, you know, the Grijalva machine has always fought over the extra machine in the South and West sides. There's always been a battle between two particular groups. This would give Grijalva a huge threshold of support if his chosen pick for mayor would be the wife of, obviously, his top chief of staff. And it just seems to me that she goes in, if she gets her top pick to replace her as the Ward 1 councilperson, she goes in with two votes out of four she needs for anything she wants to do. And I don't even know what she wants to do, to be very honest with you. She may be a progressive, but she is not a practical progressive. And I think that we will turn the clock back really many, many years to a time when we were battling over and over again a real progressive movement within the city that was really, I think, a negative for the city in many respects, in the battle over, not in my backyard, over other particular issues. And now we have a council that seems to get along. They seem to be able to have the support of business. They seem to be able to solve problems. And if we turn that clock back to a time when the progressives rule, I don't know what's going to happen here. I think the first reversal she's going to give, and she's famous for reversing herself, will be she will support the Sanctuary Cities movement if she gets the nomination, which would be a 180, which wouldn't surprise me. But anyway.
Well, interesting comment you made using the term practical progressive, because that's often been ascribed to Steve Farley.
Yes.
With focus on the term practical, that, yes, he is progressive, but he's been very effective at getting things done and not going to the extremes one end or the other. You know, the local kind of internal battles among groups that support Grijalva, as you say, or the Grijalva machine and the others, that's nothing new. I mean, that's local politics, and I think all Democrats in Pima County and City of Tucson support Representative Grijalva in terms of Congress and the great things he's done there. That doesn't always translate on the local level, and there's folks that Representative Grijalva has supported who have won and others who have lost when it comes to statewide or local races. But Romero is connected there. She has been for a long time. That may be where a lot of the money has come from. The contrast, though, is that area of focus has been often limited, as you mentioned, to the Ward 1, to the west side of Tucson, the south side, as opposed to Steve Farley's work and representation, which has really encompassed more of the city of Tucson, if you look at the districts he's represented in the legislature. So he, I think, has had a larger base. He's more well-known, and that, not just name ID, but comfort level, particularly among active Democrats in the city of Tucson and the area, I think it's made a big difference in this campaign. He started, I think, with a larger base of name ID and support, and has continued to grow that. And when you're looking at a primary campaign like this, you're looking at voters who have been active, longtime Democrats, the base of the party folks, and they look to see who has been active for the longest, who has really given a lot within the community and been active within the party as well. And of the three candidates, Steve Farley represents that. And so he's built up a lot of goodwill, a lot of comfort with his approach and the things he's done. And I think that has served him well and may have been a large factor in leading to the fact that he has led in all the polls that have come out, too, even recently, as I understand. And so that connection to the Grijalva group, you know, as good a work as the congressman has done, I don't think translates as much to a mayor's race as has the work that the candidates themselves have done in the community.
If you take this all Democratic council, and it will be all Democrat, and you just turn the dial a little bit to the left, you go further and further to the left, and you are really right back, as I mentioned earlier, into a time when we just had one war after another over neighborhoods, over business, over all kinds of issues. This council has pretty much walked a fine line of supporting business and being able to meet social needs and social demands of a community that it has about a fourth of its population under the poverty level. And I think it's done a good job. And the people of Tucson, Arizona have said yes when they wanted to were asked to spend more money on streets and pay more taxes for street improvements, they said yes. Same thing with park improvements. They said yes. This council has enjoyed really a referendum in each one of those votes that says we support you. And boy, I'd sure hate to see that change, because I think Jonathan Rockchild was able to, our current mayor, walk this fine line between not only serving a social need, but also the business of business in a town that absolutely has to have a thriving business community in order to support social needs. And he's done that well. But boy, I'll tell you, that can be reversed in a hurry if we get into one battle after another. And I see that coming if Raina Romero is mayor of this town. I really do. And I don't want to see that happen again. But we'll see.
Well, one thing the mayor did very well, as you say, was be able to bring the different parties together rather than pit them against one another.
Yes.
So you never heard neighborhoods versus business or unions versus neighborhoods or labor or other groups. He did a great job, not just walking that line, but really bringing collaboration there, and did very successful. Again, I think you saw a lot of pragmatism there that the mayor has to have, whoever the next mayor is, to be successful.
Well, I tell you, I've never seen a third-party money like this. I mean, we almost will reach $1 million. We've seen a total distortion of Steve Farley's voting record as a state senator, which is just total lies, and most people who have followed politics in any shape or form would suggest that no, Steve Farley did not oppose teacher raises. No, he did not oppose affordable care money for the citizens of the state of Arizona. All that is just a total lie. But once you get a third party in that, you really can't identify. Almost no, all bets are off. And you can say anything you want to do, and the council candidate, or mayoral candidate in this case, can disavow any kind of relationship with what actually landed on my doorstep. And I think that's a bad thing. I really do. We're going places we've never been before in city politics, in my opinion.
I think those third-party attack ads and mailers are really going to backfire for the Romero campaign, because, again, the people who receive those are Democrats, and Democrats are aware of Steve Farley's record for Southern Arizona and all that he's done. And I think they recognize that those are attacks and will react to them. So it's either going to, I think, move people toward Steve Farley's column, or have the effect that attack ads have, which is to depress voting for all candidates, or send voters to a third candidate. So ironically, they could help Randy Dorman more than Raina Romero.
That's absolutely
true.
And with
the polls,
yes,
the way they are, all of that goes to help Steve Farley. So I think those ads were a mistake, and I think they do more harm than good to Romero's campaign.
Oh, great work, Don Jorgensen. Thanks very much for sharing your thoughts with us. We always appreciate it very, very much. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you, John.
Don Jorgensen, former chair of the Democratic Party. This portion of the John C. Scott Show brought to you by Perfection Auto Works and Mike Emery. Perfection Auto Works at 1046 North Beverly offers you free air conditioning belt and hose inspection. Worried about whether your air conditioner is going to last throughout the rest of the summer? Just take your car into Perfection Auto Works at 1046 North Beverly for free air conditioning belt and hose inspection. Absolutely free. Free radiator and cooling system diagnostic. And free fall trip vehicle inspection. Headed for the high country to go to the Aspens as they turn? Well, then just get your car in to Perfection Auto Works at 1046 North Beverly. You know, the reason I've chosen Mike Emery and Perfection Auto Works to repair the problems that my car has had is because I believe him to be an honest man. I believe him to be fair. And I believe that his professionals are the best in the business. Perfection Auto Works at 1046 North Beverly. Call them at 323-8650. There are hundreds of options when it comes to auto repair for your family's car. I ask you to choose Perfection Auto Works at 1046 North Beverly. I trust Mike Emery and Perfection Auto Works, and you can too. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the John C. Scott Political Talk Show on this August 19th. Benny White is a former Marine jet fighter pilot from the Vietnam era. He's also spent 30-some years plus in the passenger, obviously cockpits of passenger jets on Delta Airlines for well over three decades, and has investigated plane crashes all over the world for Delta Airlines and others. But now he's a Republican expert. I am trusting him. He has a law degree, and I thought when we talked last week, there was no question that the sanctuary movement ballots were not good enough in order to qualify the sanctuary question for the city ballot in November. But I was wrong. Apparently, the judge rejects a bid to knock the sanctuary initiative off the November ballot. And how the hell did that happen? Betty White was there fighting it. How the hell did that happen?
Hey, John, thanks for having me on. I want to take just a moment of personal privilege to wish my bride of 39 years a very happy anniversary. I don't know why she's put up with me this long, but she's kept me alive so far. And if she hadn't stepped in to save me, I'd probably be sediment out in the ocean somewhere.
Judy is a wonderful lady, former chair of the Republican Party in Pima County. Beautiful, I might add, and just a special lady. And I'm not even married to her. You are, obviously. So that's pretty. You're very lucky. You're a lucky guy.
All right, back to the lawsuit.
Yes, what happened?
We lost.
How could you lose? I mean, you gave me 14 points and said each one of those would disqualify these ballots from being able to put this sanctuary issue before voters.
Well, I had my opinion that Judge Metcalf had his opinion, and his counts and mine doesn't, is the way that works.
I don't understand how they ruled against some very obvious questions as to whether this was legal in any way, shape, or form. Go over some of the issues you felt strongly about and surprised you most that he rejected.
Well, I agreed with Judge Metcalf in some of his conclusions and findings in his order. Unfortunately, I disagreed with many of his findings in that I think he made several errors in law and he abused his discretion in several other areas. Where we are right now is that we have the option of appealing his ruling. We have to mount an appeal by Friday of this week. There's only about $30,000 standing between me and appealing the ruling, so we are at this point not going to go ahead with an appeal. But you have to understand that these lawsuits are extremely difficult to win, challenges of initiatives. Arizona has a very strong history of the initiative power of citizens to bring forward measures, put them on the ballot, and then let the voters decide. And so our statutes and our courts give the cities a lot of leeway and discretion in how they want to go about that. One of the arguments that we tried to make with the judge is that these city initiatives are a matter of statewide importance. And we have some case law that was precedent that we thought would convince the trial judge, Judge Metcalf, of our position in that. However, the Arizona Constitution and the statutes that apply here do give the cities a lot of discretion in how they want to go about holding elections involving initiative petition. And they can pretty much make up the rules any way they want to. So Judge Metcalf did not agree with our position that strict compliance should apply to the way the city of Tucson goes about it. So if you don't do strict compliance, you go to substantial compliance. And substantial compliance means that you can do almost anything as long as it doesn't clearly violate a constitutional principle or it causes confusion among the voters. One of the major problems with the Tucson City petition process is that the petition itself, the form, does not comply with the Constitution. It does not comply with the state law. It doesn't even comply with the city code. And all of those things, in my mind, cause the city initiative petition to be invalid because it doesn't comply with the law. But the way the courts would look at that was that they would say, well, is it substantial compliance? And the way they would look at that is, does it cause confusion among the voters? And the problem there with the city petition is that they require an actual address. And they, in parentheses, behind that actual address requirement, say street number and name. Well, on about half of the petitions that were submitted, the signatures on the petitions did not include a complete residential address, which is the requirement in the state law and the requirement in the city code. It only had a street number and a street address. Well, our argument was that that is not a complete residential address as is required in the city code and therefore all of those signatures should have been taken out. The reason that's important is that one of the things the city clerk is supposed to do, which they did not do, is when they first get those petitions, they're supposed to go through each page and each line on the page to decide whether or not that voter is potentially eligible to be a qualified voter, qualified elector. Well, in order to be a qualified elector, you have to reside at an address within the city limits. So what the city clerk did was he looked at the pages, and if the voter had written down on the line, I live in Green Valley, I live in Suarita, I live in Vail, I live in Marana, well, then those lines were taken out for the most part. They didn't take all of them out. They left some in that were in Tempe, some that were in Mesa, different places around the state. And the way that happens is these petitions were collected at 4th Avenue Street Fair, the Home Show, the fairgrounds, other places where a lot of people other than Tucson voters happened to be. And the circulators didn't ask those people that were signing the petitions, are you a qualified elector registered to vote in Tucson city elections? They just ask them, are you registered to vote? There's a huge difference when you're trying to decide whether someone is a Tucson qualified elector. So that was the major problem with what the city did. They didn't have the right form. They didn't follow their own rules. And we were going to address all of those things in the evidentiary hearing that is scheduled for tomorrow, or was scheduled for tomorrow, and on Wednesday. But in Judge Metcalf's ruling, he decided, arbitrarily in my opinion, that an evidentiary hearing was not required. So therefore, we never get our day in court to present evidence, to have testimony from witnesses, to be able to cross-examine witnesses, have our theories challenged in front of the court to determine whether or not we had substantial and probative evidence to carry our burden of proof. And our burden of proof is high. We have to prove by a preponderance of the evidence that our claims are valid. And we didn't get that chance. So,
well, there's no question in your mind, right, Benny, that these petitions would never have passed state muster at all, right?
That's never. That's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and Tucson does it different than the city or the Pima County would do it. For example, the Tucson Code says that when you're trying to figure out how many valid signatures are required as a minimum number, the city code says that you only count the votes cast for candidates for mayor, period. The state law says you count all of the votes cast in an election for mayor and council. So it's not candidates in the state law. It's anybody that casts a vote. So in the Tucson city election that was at issue here, which was the 2015 election, there were about 16,000 people that cast a ballot, but they didn't vote for Jonathan Rothschild. They were undervotes because they didn't mark any vote at all. Well, there's case law that says you don't count undervotes. And as a result of that case law, then those people are not respected or in some ways disenfranchised from consideration when you decide how many valid signatures you have. The result of all of that is that where the state constitution requires 15% of the total qualified electors, which is 225,000 or that about that number of voters in Tucson, the city code only requires 3.8% under this ruling in this particular initiative. So that's a far stretch from 15%. It indicates a very low level of support to put this petition on the ballot, or initiative on the ballot. And the reason that's important is the city is going to spend probably $250,000 or so printing up pamphlets and mailing them out to people. Because we have mail elections, every voter, or every household at least, will get one of those publicity pamphlets. So you go through all of that process. You go through the process of printing the ballots, counting the votes, reporting the results, And all of this for an initiative that is going to be immediately challenged if it's passed by people that follow the city attorney's opinion that it's illegal in the first place. And so we'll go through another series of court hearings and court expenses and legal fees to show the public that this might have been a great idea on somebody's part, but it's illegal under Arizona law.
By the way, will you be involved in challenging that particular sanctuary movement situation if, in fact, it passes the city's vote?
I'll have to do my checkbook and see what the balance is by that time, because that's going to be an expensive process.
Well, I wouldn't discuss that with Judy if I were you.
It'll be a different set of considerations, and we'll just have to see how that goes.
Well, there's no doubt that it seems like the folks that joined you in this particular effort to strike this from the ballot did their homework. I mean, it was a very legitimate complaint on all kinds of counts that this was not valid, that these signatures were not valid, and this should never be on the ballot. So, but
well,
it is, I guess.
You know, there's a Sanctuary City Initiative part of it, John, but as you know from many conversations we've had, my interest here is the election law. Our election laws are, in some cases, very, very poorly written. They're very difficult to understand. We get to pay lawyers a lot of money to try to figure out what they mean. We spend a lot of time in court arguing about what they mean. And I just wish the legislators would inform themselves about the statutes and talk to people that have been down this route to see what it is we can do to clarify the law. A lot of people don't want the law clarified. They'd like a lot of ambiguity and vagueness in them so that they can argue whichever way they want to argue in a given case. But that makes it really hard on the public to know what the law is.
Well, Benny White, thanks so much for being on the air with us. Thanks so much for your efforts and being a part of our town and caring enough to be involved almost on a regular basis to make this a better town. Thank you. Appreciate
it. Well, I'll have to go out there on the street and try to find another windmill to fence with.
That's a good idea.
Done on this one.
Don Quixote. Thank you. All right, Benny.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Bye-bye, Jim.
Benny White on the John C. Scott Political Talk Show. Larry Bodine will be with us next. He's with Blog for Arizona. Washington Post calls it the best blog in Arizona, the progressive blog of the state. You wonder what the progressives are thinking? Go to Blog for Arizona, which we'll do in a moment. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the John C. Scott Political Talk Show on this August 19th. Looking for Larry Bodine of Blog for Arizona. We're trying to get in touch with Larry. I think we got a cell phone, but we don't have him yet. And then we'll be talking with Steve Farley, Democratic candidate for mayor of Tucson. And then we'll talk with Allison Jones, chair of the Pima County Democratic Party, followed by Republican Leah Marquez Peterson, a member of the Arizona Corporation Commission. You know, I've said at the very beginning of the show that I do not support Raheena Romero for mayor of Tucson. I support Steve Farley for the Democratic nomination. I've known Steve Farley for a dozen years, a legislator who I've had many contacts with. We featured his weekly report on the John C. Scott Show on many stations over many, many years. I found him to be an honest, reliable, hardworking legislator who always told me the truth. What has happened to his campaign is that the third-party money that may total over $1 million on the behalf of Raheena Romero has distorted the voting record of Steve Farley and lied about his service to Arizona. And it reminds me of Kipling that if you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken, twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools, and watch the things that you gave your life to broken and stop and build them up with worn-out tools. Kipling had it all together there. If you think you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken, twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools. And that's exactly what the third-party effort of the Raheena Romero campaign is doing to the Democratic candidate for mayor, Steve Farley. Hopefully we'll get a hold of Steve Farley in just a few moments. Larry Bodine is next up on the John C. Scott Political Talk Show on this Monday, August the 19th. 790-2040, what do you think about the third-party money in this race for mayor? Does it bother you? Does it distort things? Is it really out of the pale here of what's going on? Well, Steve Farley's with us right now, and welcome to our show. Stephen.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, we had to get you early because I've got Larry Bodine. I couldn't get a hold of him. You know, I was just talking about if you can keep your If you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken, twisted by knaves, to make a trap for fools, that's what happened in the flyers that were sent out by this third-party money on behalf of Rahina Romero on your public record. It was disgusting. It was vile. I couldn't believe that they lied about you when you are known so well among the people of Tucson and southern Arizona. But I guess that's politics, unfortunately.
Well, it shouldn't be. But the big question is, why? What dark money organization in Phoenix is working so hard to interfere with the Tucson mayor election? Because the return address is a condo north of Sky Harbor. And there's no indication, there's no union bug, there's no indication of who paid for this except for something called the Institute for Policy and Politics that nobody knows has ever existed. And it's a classic Koch brother kind of thing. If you look at the back where they're trying to show all the supposedly anti-progressive things I did, let me tick them off one by one. One of them says that I supposedly voted against school reform for tax credits for disabled students. That was a voucher bill from Rick Murphy, who was Steve Yarbrough's peon in the legislature, trying to run that for him to try to take money away from our public schools and shift them into unaccountable private schools. Every Democrat voted against it, of course. Another one said opposed a minimum wage increase. Well, the one in their footnote they say they're talking about is an attempt by Republicans to distract voters from the real minimum wage increase that passed. And that one that the Republicans proposed would have frozen the minimum wage at $7.65 an hour and never have any adjustment for inflation. So, yeah, of course I voted against it, as did all labor, as did all Democrats. Another one said voted against free speech on college campuses. And this was an attempt by conservatives to regulate speech on campuses, sponsored by Paul Boyer, a Republican. And, yeah, all the Democrats voted against it, including me. And it was opposed by Lucha. The last one actually is interesting. It says vehemently opposed law to bring more teachers into the classroom. Well, that was Sylvia Allen's bill last year. Yes, that's Sylvia Allen. And it was her effort to eliminate teacher accreditation in Arizona, which was opposed by all the teachers and the AEA and, again, voted against by all Democrats. So turning a progressive record against me by saying the bills I voted against were progressive is outrageous and typical Koch brother politics that they usually run against a Democrat in a general election. So this stuff is ugly, and it's really unbelievable that Phoenix would spend this much money to get involved in our race. Just all the more reason for people to stand up and elect someone who's actually going to stand up for Tucson in the mayor's office.
Well, you know, it must be hurtful to hear all these words twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools.
Oh, this isn't about her. I mean, it's not about hurtful. This you get in this politics, you learn to take your lumps. It's what's upsetting about it is the way it's twisting the truth to low-information voters who might not know what the truth is. That's outrageous.
Well, it seems to me you've gone on with your campaign. There's nothing else you can do. And you've proceeded to say, this is who I am, this is what I want to do, and this is why you ought to vote for me, which a great many people have already done, I might add. But it is one of those things when you look at the numbers saying she may have gone to almost $600,000, $700,000 over her so-called clean elections money with the dark money that she's used, and she is the queen of dark money now, and that's just something you can't deal with. I mean, there's nothing you can do about it, I suppose.
Well, all you can do about it is play your game, make my phone calls, knock my doors, and I'll tell you, the response has been amazing. And we've gotten more than 2,200 individual donors to our campaign, and that's still continuing to increase. We've had full phone banks, 4 hours every day, calling people who are voters and encouraging them to vote for our campaign and turn in their ballots. All volunteers is what we're doing with our field operation. We got more than 20,000 voters called last week alone with volunteers, personal calls. We're doing amazing things to be able to reach out to voters. I'm still confident that even though we're going to be outspent maybe 2, 3, even 4 to 1 by the time this thing is done, we're going to prevail because the people of Tucson understand that they will not allow their mayor's office to be stolen by outside interests.
You know, I don't think there would have been a modern streetcar when we got it, had it not been for you. You laid the groundwork for that. You were a pioneer in trying to talk about rail with the people of Tucson, and they finally said yes, and obviously it's paid off handsomely for the downtown renovation. It's a part of your legacy. And obviously, your artwork downtown will always be a part of your legacy. You know, it's amazing, Steve. You and I have known each other a very, very long time. I don't know a lawmaker that is better known in Tucson. A lot of people say, well, you go up to Phoenix, people forget about who you are, don't know who represents them in the legislature. But you've always come back home on weekends to fight for the people in your legislative district. And I think that's going to pay off for you as well, because people know
you. That's our job. That's what we're supposed to be doing. That's what I love the most, is constituent service. I'm not up there because I deserve some sort of fancy title to tell people what to do. I'm up there because my job is to serve the people who elected me. That's why, as mayor, I don't want to be that guy hiding up on the 10th floor, lording over the bureaucracy. I want to be the guy who represents the people to the bureaucracy. That's why I talk with people all the time. That's why I'm going out this afternoon again on the 3 Wilmot bus and talking with people about what they'd like to do if they were mayor. And that you got to have in contact with the people. I've always done that in the legislature. The people who have had issues with state government, and I've been able to get them real solutions. That's what we need to do. Our job is service. It isn't any sort of glorious title to be mayor of the city. It's a title of service to make sure that people get the quality of life they deserve, the job that they need, the infrastructure they deserve, and the public safety and parks that they deserve. That's what we do, and I'm really excited to continue my spirit of public service that I've shown throughout my career to help this city I love without having to spend as much time on I-10 going back and forth to Phoenix as I did the last 12 years. That's for sure.
That gets old even after the very brief time I did that. I never got used to it. Bobby's a caller to our show. Bobby, welcome to the John C. Scott Show. I'm talking with Steve Farley. Go ahead, Bobby.
Hi, John. Thanks for letting me on. You know, I'm just flabbergasted by Farley's comments stating about how the Romero campaign's twisting words. When I got a mailer in the mail this past week talking about Cody Ritchie and how he donated to Trump, well, aren't there some Republican businessmen who donated to Farley's campaign?
Well, Steve Farley's right here, so go ahead.
You might as well answer it. Of course there are. There are people. I'll take a lot of people who care about Tucson donating to my campaign. But I would never ask them to be the chair of my campaign the way Raheena Romero did. The chair of your campaign, it represents the values of your campaign. That's why
and
I chose Yolanda Herrera,
who is
the president.
Isn't that what we
I'm
want?
Sorry. Can I answer what's going on? Yeah, of course we've been bipartisan. But that doesn't mean you put someone who gave $30,000 to elect Donald Trump at the power over your campaign that a chair is. I gave Yolanda Herrera, who is the president of the Sunnyside Neighborhood Association, the longtime South Side activist for decades. She's the chair of my campaign because that's what I stand for. Listening to people, listening to the history and the culture of our community, listening to our neighborhoods. It's not about getting my campaign in the hands of someone who gave $30,000 to elect Donald Trump in 2016.
Isn't her co-chair the founder of the Green Party here in Arizona? Now, isn't that a show of bipartisan?
But you've got two co-chairs, and one of them gave $30,000 to Donald Trump. I mean, I think
don't
voters just have to ask, is that the person you want to support?
Polarized country?
Bipartisanship is different from supporting Donald Trump. I'll tell you that. And that's absolutely something that anyone looks at Donald Trump, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, and you see that guy ripping our social fabric apart every single day with every tweet, and that's not somebody you want to be encouraging anything with.
All right, Bobby, thanks for your call. Appreciate it. And Steve, thanks for answering his question. You know, this is coming right down to the nitty-gritty. We're going to have a campaign here that ends a week from tomorrow. I don't know. I think you've done everything you can do, haven't you? I mean, I don't know how you can look back on this one and say, boy, I wish I could have, would have, should have. People do that about campaigns, but not this one, Steve.
No, I've been working nonstop since I got into this race in early January and even beforehand. This is something where we've got to contact every voter. We can't take anything for granted. That's why I walk like 12 hours a weekend in 105 degrees, hitting those doors personally and talk with everybody I can. That's why we're going to be calling through our list of people who still have their ballots in hand several times over the next week before Election Day to make sure that they're turning them in and voting for the right people. We need to have good leadership in this city. We need to be able to move forward. And, yeah, we can move forward together. And with my track record of actually being able to deliver, working in a bipartisan way in the legislature when President Obama rolled out the Affordable Care Act to expand Medicaid health care to 400,000 people, working to be able to leverage the power of Red for Ed to get $415 million in new funding for our public schools this year alone, and bringing people together to get them to stop fighting about transportation in 2006 when I didn't have any title at all, and get the RTA approved and have a transportation plan for the first time in 40 years of failure. I can get stuff done. I can get us to work in together to solve our basics of public safety, parks, and our potholes. And I can move us forward on key things like jobs and education and healthcare and climate change. And I'm really looking forward to being able to work with all the connections I have, both here and in the legislature, to be able to move us to a next level. So I think people see that. I've got to get that message to voters right down to the last day, the last hour that people can turn in their ballots. And I'm hoping people turn in their ballots. If you haven't voted yet, please remember, mail them in tomorrow. By tomorrow, you want to get your ballot in so it gets there in time. Otherwise, you may want to hold on to it and drop it off on election day at one of the 7 polling places that will be open, although they won't be polling places, just places to drop off your ballot.
Well, it seems to me that this is going to be a historic campaign, and the fact that this dark money, and it is dark money, if you can't track it, you can't find out who actually wrote the checks out and who is actually orchestrating the third-party effort, it's dark money. And we will see it now in a form that we've never seen it before. And we're talking about perhaps as much as $1 million thrown into a mayoral Democratic primary in the last few weeks of the campaign from a source we just don't know about. Now, we know the connections between, obviously, Raheena Romero, whose husband works for Raul Grijalva. We know the power of the longtime congressman, longtime political figure in southern Arizona. We know he has a machine. He wants to increase the power of that machine. And I believe his influence on City Hall will increase greatly if you nominate and then elect Raheena Romero as your mayor and then replace her with one of her aides as a Ward 1 councilperson. She's 2 votes away from having anything she wants. And that is really a disturbing situation for anybody that's followed City Hall as closely as I have or anybody has over the last 10 or 12 years. This is a mitigated disaster if you nominate this lady to be the next mayor of Tucson. And, you know, I understand, Steve, that you just got to go about telling people who you are and what you are and asking for their vote. But there's a very big picture here and a historic election in chartered waters that we've never been in before. And I'm going to be really fascinated by how people respond to it. Larry Bodine's going to be with me from Blog for Arizona. Allison Jones, the current chair of the Democratic Party, wanted to comment on this. And we will include them in our show later in this hour and next hour. How do people help you in the final week of this campaign, Steve Farley?
Well, go to the website. That's steveforTucson.com. Sign up for one of our shifts doing the phone banking or the door-to-door. If you've got a little bit of cash you'd like to throw our way so we can to get our communication out there to show folks exactly what I've done and what I will be able to do in the mayor's office, please do that there as well. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Make sure you tell your friends and tell your family that they should be putting their ballots in the mail by tomorrow and voting for Steve Farley for mayor. I think we're going to be able to overcome this historic dark money spending that we've seen so far and the historic outside groups and PACs and all the rest of that because the people of Tucson, they just know better. They can see beyond that. And tell people they've got to stand up for Tucson and stand up against anonymous money from Phoenix stealing our election.
You know, it seems to me, too, there's a couple of issues, and I only have about 3 or 4 minutes left. Let's take them. Candidates, faster police response will take money. And I think each one of you, the 3 of you, seeking the Democratic nomination for mayor, believes, and I believe, that we are understaffed when it comes to a police department. We don't have enough police officers on duty to keep us safe. But it's going to take some money to do that. So how do we fund that, and when do we get the police complement that we actually deserve and need to make this city safer? How do we do that, Steve?
We've got to prioritize public safety because the kinds of response times or lack thereof are absolutely inexcusable for a town in which we need to make sure that, that people feel a sense of safety where we live. We're down 30% in commissioned officers and firefighters since 2005. We've got to get back up to where we were, and that is going to require money. Part of what we do is we've got to reclaim that money that's staying up in Phoenix in foregone state shared revenues because we have such a long, a big unincorporated county. So I think the long-term solution is to get that $70 million back here in Tucson where it belongs. And that comes through an annexation process, which I think I'm well positioned to be able to do successfully because the folks in the Casas Adobes and the Foothills who have elected me three times to the Senate have a certain amount of trust in me to be able to represent them as their mayor as well. And when you put that together with the fact that the county has lost its road bonds recently, the city has passed their road measures, and there's a real sense that Tucson Police and Tucson Fire will get you better service in those areas as well, and that we can all have our property taxes lowered across all Pima County, whether or not we live in those unincorporated areas, if we incorporate into the city of Tucson. That's a very attractive proposition to be able to vote for, and that's it's got to be voluntary, so I think I can help lead a campaign to make that happen. And that would give us the money to be able to fully staff our public safety, make sure our park's in great shape, and get our potholes filled.
You know, a judge, of course, has ruled that the sanctuary city issue will remain on the ballot, even though it was challenged by some Republicans. It will be a part of the decision that voters will make come November. You oppose the sanctuary city proposal, don't you?
As do all the mayor candidates. I think everyone agrees that the potential loss of $130 million a year in state and federal funds, together with the negative attention that this would draw upon our community, could potentially harm the undocumented people, the refugees, and the asylum seekers that we say we're trying to help. And that's not a good idea, because ultimately, even if this thing passed, it's not going to change the way things are already, because we already have immigrant welcoming community procedures in place through our police department in which folks will not be reported to ICE when there's contact. So ultimately, there's no good reason to vote for this because there's a lot of reasons why it could potentially be harmful to the folks we're trying to help.
Well, if Rahina Romero gets the nomination, this will be her first flip-flop of the hundreds to follow, I assure you. I will bet every dime I have that would be the first reversal because there'll be many of those, and that would be disastrous. You know, that is the one thing I think that is so separates the two of you, Rahina Romero and you, Steve Farley, is decisiveness. You have to be decisive if you're going to be mayor. You have to make a decision. You have to stay with that decision. You have to believe in the decisions you make and follow through with them. And you just can't go all over. You can't be for it one day and against it the next.
And you have to explain why you're taking that position.
I mean, absolutely.
That's the whole thing. You've got to be accountable to the people who elected you and not hide your decisions or your reasons for making them. You're supposed to be representing the people who voted for you. So tell them why you're doing it. And I think if you can explain why you're doing it and you're doing it for the right reasons, people are going to go along with you. That's the way it works. That's what leadership's supposed to be about.
Steve Farley, thanks for being on the show. I appreciate it very much.
Hey, thank you for having me, John.
Yeah. All right. Next up, Larry Bodine of Blog for Arizona, the progressive blog of Southern Arizona. This portion of the John C. Scott Show brought to you by Perfection Auto Works and Mike Emery at 1046 North Beverly. Choose Mike Emery and Perfection Auto Works for the repair of your car. KVOI, The Voice. This is the John C. Scott Political Forum, now in its 31st year of continuous political talk in Southern Arizona.